In the spring of 1954, while the nation's attention was riveted to the nationally televised and emotionally charged Army-McCarthy hearings, a state-level investigation conducted in secrecy lacked the drama and theatrics of McCarthyism, perhaps, but it did have broad implications for domestic politics, and it was an unprecedented collaboration between government agencies and organized crime during World War II and the ensuing Cold War era. In response to continued criticism of his decision to commute mafia crime boss Lucky Luciano's 30 to 50-year sentence in January 1946, New York Governor Thomas E. Dewey appointed William B. Herlins as the state's first commissioner of investigations to conduct a formal investigation of Luciano's involvement in Operation Underworld, an Office of Naval Intelligence scheme to use New York City syndicate criminals to help protect the Brooklyn waterfront against possible sabotage. Concerned about the security of the New York port area, Commander Radcliffe Haffenden in ONI sought the aid and cooperation of Joseph Sachs Lanza, then under indictment for extortion. Lanza's connections were beneficial in preventing dock workers from striking, but Lanza was a low-level member in the underworld food chain, and his authority was limited. And so he suggested that Haffenden, through Moses Polakoff, Luciano's attorney, appeal to Meyer Lansky first on behalf of Luciano, who was in prison. Acting as a liaison between the underworld and the government, Lansky was permitted to visit Luciano at in Dannemora, New York. And there, according to ONI and Dewey, Luciano put the word out for his underlings to cooperate with the Navy. Dock workers, fishermen, and hoodlums who had been mute became the eyes and ears of naval intelligence. In February 1943, Luciano, claiming he had provided valuable intelligence for the Allied invasion of Sicily, directed his attorney, Polakoff, to petition the New York Supreme Court for a pardon, which denied his appeal, but suggested that he might try later for clemency, which he did and was granted on VE Day, of course, in 1945. And at that time, Dewey accepted the recommendation from the New York State Parole Board for his clemency based on the war effort and signed his sentence commutation 10 years after he had prosecuted him, contending that Luciano's contribution was of some value, as he mentioned to the New York State Legislature. Dewey's conviction of Luciano, just backing up a bit, launched a political career that included 3 terms as governor of New York, and twice in 1944 and 48, he was a Republican Party's presidential candidate. But questionable tactics he employed with witnesses testifying against Luciano, several of whom later recanted their testimony, and subsequent public criticism for commuting Luciano's sentence cast a cloud of suspicion over Dewey that may have prevented him from enjoying an even more distinguished career. Also playing an integral role in this episode was the relatively obscure Federal Bureau of Narcotics, a middle-level agency in the Department of Treasury under the direction of Commissioner Harry J. Anslinger. FBN agents, adept in undercover work and intelligence gathering, who had established contacts with foreign governments and apprehended international drug traffickers, were well suited for a clandestine operation such as the Sub Rosa Alliance between the Navy and the underworld. Herlins' investigation occurred from January through September 1954. During that time, Herlins and 5 of his investigators interviewed 57 witnesses that produced over 2,800 pages of sworn testimony and remained closed to the public until 1976 at the request of the Navy. The investigation to determine whether Luciano had ever been asked to and did help the war effort focused on Luciano, but it also included the role of other persons in any way connected with the Navy's activities. 5 of the 57 witnesses, significantly, were FBN agents, including District Supervisors George H. White and Charles Siragusa, who each testified for 2 days. Anslinger did not appear as a witness, but he did submit official correspondence, affidavits, and other documents pertinent to Luciano's activities. FBN agents, in fact, accounted for more than 700 pages, or roughly 25% of the evidence and testimony gathered, amassed by Herlins during that summer. In addition to Herlins' records, George White kept diaries for the 30 years that he was active as an FBN agent, which is a virtual archival treasure trove of the agent's personal and official correspondence relating not only to the Herlins investigation, but other matters as well over 3 decades. And they provide us with unusual insight into FBN activities related to Operation Underworld and Dewey. It's also interesting to note that 3 years prior to this Herlins investigation, 1954, both White and Siragusa served as primary investigators for the Cavolver Committee in 1951, investigating organized crime. White and Siragusa were not just drug busters. Joining the Bureau in 1935, White's reputation spread beyond drug enforcement. CIA counterintelligence chief James J. Angleton, a seasoned veteran of Cold War intrigue, characterized White as a different kettle of fish. During World War II, he was the New York director of all OSS counterespionage training. And in addition to his counterintelligence activities, White participated in the OSS research and development project using THC, a marijuana derivative, to search for a narcotic capable of forcing the subject to tell the truth. Siragusa, who began his FBN career in 1939, was commissioned as a naval ensign in the OSS during the war. Like White, he also was a liaison with the CIA and arguably was more knowledgeable about the mafia than any other law enforcement officer in the country. While simultaneously earning the contempt of criminals, White made powerful political enemies, including Dewey. When White was in line for the district supervisor position in New York, usually a stepping stone for an administrative position in Washington, Dewey thought White's personality was too abrasive and blocked his promotion. Because White frequently referred to his diary during his testimony in Herlins' investigation as a source of information, Herlins wanted to examine it as evidence and asked him to produce it for the benefit of the inquiry. On Friday, 2 April, White said he would submit the diary if he found it. When the committee reconvened the following Tuesday morning, however, White changed his mind and decided not to cooperate. When Herlins then asked for several pages of White's memorandum detailing his meetings and conversations with Little Augie Del Grazio, one of White's drug subjects during the OSS days, and a Luciano lieutenant, White lied and said he destroyed them, contending that he really should not have kept them at all since much of it was classified material. The next day, as he noted in his diary, White called Rudolph Halley, a chief counsel for the Cavolver Committee, and then in 1954, president of New York City Council, saying that he was puzzled by Herlins' inquiry and suspected that he might be trying to discredit me for some reason. Halley advised only, if that's true, it can't be helped. Let Herlins take his best shot. So White would not be charged with contempt. Halley suggested that White provide Herlins with carefully selected excerpts of the diary, being cautious not to reveal any sensitive or incriminating material. White's reasons for not turning over his diary to Herlins actually had little to do with his official FBN activities. At that time, his designation was, FBN designation was supervisor at large, a very unusual one at that, normally a supervisor of New York or Boston or whatever the city might be. And the reason is because in 1953 and 54, while this Herlins investigation was going on, George White was on the payroll of the CIA. And he had been recruited by Sidney Gottlieb, the CIA's research chemist, to participate in the CIA's MKUltra drug experimentation program, in which they moved up a bit from THC to LSD. And using the pseudonym Morgan Hall, White was part of this program for several years. Gottlieb also advised White not to hand over the diary and advised him to go slow on the Hall operation in view of the Herlins quiz. White needed little incentive to frustrate the Dewey-sponsored investigation. In fact, he was so incensed with what he called Herlins' star chamber methods, he told Anslinger he was thinking about suing Herlins for slander. Nearly as mysterious as Luciano's role in Operation Underworld, or Dewey's reasons for commuting Luciano's sentence, was Commander Haffenden, who was reprimanded just prior to the war for disregarding his duties and transferring from New York to the Coast Patrol in California. And according to an FBI investigation, Haffenden received the Purple Heart at Iwo Jima, but not because he was wounded in action, because he was hospitalized as a result of a large gun going off next to him, thus renewing a stomach ailment. After returning from the Pacific, Haffenden, who was a friend of Polakoff, submitted an affidavit to Charles Brightell, Dewey's attorney, stating that while he was in the ONI, he had received valuable information from Luciano, which aided considerably in the invasion of Sicily. Curiously, however, an ONI investigation revealed that Haffenden never visited Luciano in prison and concluded that Luciano had never submitted any information of value whatsoever. Not only did Haffenden not visit Luciano, neither did anyone from the War Department or the OSS, according to an FBI investigation. In July 1945, ONI received an anonymous letter charging that Haffenden based his affidavit on the false and repulsive claim that Luciano had contributed in great measure to the U.S. success in the invasion of Sicily. When pressed for specific information about his relationship with Luciano, Luciano's contribution to the Navy, Haffenden commented that large numbers of informants were constantly sent to my office and were interviewed by agents under my command. It is difficult to say how many such informants came to my attention through the cooperation of Luciano. But because Haffenden kept no written records of the names of his large numbers of informants or information they provided, he could not substantiate precisely what assistance Luciano might have offered. Haffenden not only did not know the names of the informants, nor did he even meet with any of the strange-looking Italians who visited his office. Lacking access to any naval records that might confirm Luciano's war contributions, evaluating the true nature of Operation Underworld is difficult, and the task is even more formidable when so many conflicting accounts exist. When he commuted Luciano's sentence in 1946, Dewey stated repeatedly his decision was due to Luciano's cooperation with the Navy. In March 1953, however, the new Attorney General, Herbert Brownell Jr., Dewey's former campaign manager, apparently wanting to represent his old boss favorably to the President Eisenhower, reminded his staff that Governor Dewey merely wanted to be certain that it was understood that his action in paroling Luciano was not predicated upon any grounds to the effect that Luciano had been or could be of service to the American authorities in Italy, but was predicated entirely upon different grounds. Brownell did not specify what those entirely different grounds were. In 1952, journalist Michael Stern wrote in True magazine how Luciano hoped to gain re-entry into the United States by paying bribe money through his attorney Polakoff to Breitel, who was Dewey's attorney. Alleging the first transaction between Dewey and Luciano occurred when Luciano was paroled, which Stern claimed had cost the gangster $75,000 in favor of the Republican electoral campaign, but noted that experts in this field estimate he had to spend $200,000. In exposing this payoff, Stern also noted that Luciano was the most important drug smuggler in the world, and that Governor Dewey's actions contributed to much of the international traffic in narcotics. What was especially curious about Stern's source of information was that he attributed almost exclusively to FBN agents. His story may have been sensationalistic, his tale of Luciano, but it was not because he lacked knowledgeable sources, notably Saragusa, who passed on to Stern an August 1951 memo reported by narcotics agent Joseph Amato. And the memorandum related that Luciano's initial payment of $150,000 had been paid to the right people for Luciano's parole, and also noted that Luciano worked feverishly from Italy to help elect Dewey to the presidency, believing that if elected, Dewey would consider giving him a presidential pardon and permit him re-entry into the U.S. The mob thought they had a sure thing and still can't figure out what went wrong. Luciano himself contradicted the controversy over the alleged payoff and the uncertainty of his involvement in Operation Underworld. In August 1951, while in Naples, he claimed that, "I got my pardon because of the great service I rendered to the United States, and because, after all, they reckoned I was innocent." But in a Drew Pearson column published shortly after Luciano's death in 1962, a different, less virtuous version was offered, in which Luciano refuted the claim I got out because of my efforts to the Navy. Wasn't it at all? I was getting tired of sitting up there in prison, and I had my lawyers dig up everything they could on a prominent official. When they finished, they brought me a book. The stuff was terrible. Luciano instructed the lawyer that if I didn't get out of Sing Sing, this book would be published. I told them to tell him that if they think I was bad, they should see the stuff we have on him. That's what got me out. Working undercover as part of FBN, Agent Sal Vizzini met with Luciano 9 times over a period of 3 years, talking to Lucky about his experiences with the FBN and living in Italy as an exile. And during his conversation, Vizzini later related that Luciano, having reported to him that Dewey wouldn't let me out in 1,000 years if he had his way. But I'll tell you what happened. I had a whole damn battery of lawyers. I told him I didn't care what it cost, but I wanted to dig into Dewey's background. they did come up with a pile of information that might have put him in the can. My lawyer threw that file down in front of him and told him, if I didn't get out, we're going to make it public. Evidence confirms that the Navy, through intermediaries, colluded with organized crime in Operation Underworld. Likely, Luciano did give the word to Lansky, Joe Adonis, and Frank Costello to cooperate on the waterfront. Luciano's role in the invasion of Sicily, however, is less plausible. Even if he did provide information, his value to the Allies is unknown and probably of minimal use. Regardless of how beneficial Luciano's contributions, the Navy had no reason to contact Luciano to collaborate with underworld figures for information about Sicily when they could simply have talked with other recent Italian-American immigrants who were more familiar with Sicily's topography, culture, and local political structure. The Bureau of Narcotics may have been waging a war, a vendetta, rather, against Dewey. If White could convince the Kefauver Committee that Luciano played no part in the Allied effort and at least cause Herlins to question Luciano's role, it would appear Dewey's justification for signing Luciano's parole would be severely undermined. FBN agents were not the only public officials who blamed Dewey for Luciano's drug operation. 3 years before the Herlins investigation, and after Dewey unseated W. Kingsland Macy, the New York State Republican Party chairman and former member of Congress, said during a radio interview in 1951 that there is something decidedly rotten in this Dewey-Luciano business, and that the reason given to date by the governor for Luciano's parole was false. To satisfy the public interest, Macy suggested that the Kefauver Senate Crime Investigating Committee should demand Dewey's appearance before it to explain fully the Luciano release. In justifying his allegations against Dewey, Macy referred to George White's Kefauver Committee testimony. Perhaps Dewey had been anticipating an appointment in the new Eisenhower administration in January 1953 when J. Edgar Hoover sent the governor a copy of the FBI's investigation of Luciano. Although it's not clear whether Dewey requested the file or if Hoover sent it unsolicited, it does suggest that Dewey was concerned about possible political fallout from commuting Luciano's sentence. There is no evidence to confirm that Luciano contacted his Sicilian counterparts. And again, even if he did, it was not necessary. Local anti-fascist mafiosi who had spent time in Mussolini's jails were eager to end Mussolini's repressive fascist rule and did not need encouragement from an American crime boss to help the Allies. In fact, according to Luigi Borzini, the Sicilian mafiosi were so indifferent to Luciano's reputation, they swindled him out of 15 million lire shortly after he landed in Palermo in 1946. No official investigations, directly or tangentially, exploring the Mafia-Government Alliance found any conclusive proof that Luciano effectively helped the war effort. Neither the Herlins investigation, the Kefauver Committee, nor Senator McClellan's Committee on Organized Crime and Illicit Narcotics Traffic in the early 1960s that collectively interviewed hundreds of witnesses could substantiate allegations that Luciano was a patriot. Relying on public testimony as evidence can be very useful, but it can also be problematic. We cannot gauge the atmosphere or the nonverbal communication, and we cannot know if the witness is being wholly truthful or disingenuously offering an official sanitized version. George White was nearly a hostile witness during his Herlins appearance, refuting allegations that Luciano did anything of value during the war. But White's contentious attitude toward Herlins was consistent with his personal correspondence he recorded in his diary. Writing to his longtime friend and fellow agent Garland Williams, White reiterated his testimony, maintaining, "I do not believe that Luciano was of any great assistance to the U.S. military intelligence during the war. I do know that some negotiations were being carried on with Luciano on a theory he could provide access to the Mafia in Sicily. I myself had something to do with this matter while I was in OSS in New York, and I was approached by Augie Del Grazio with the proposition whereby Luciano would be willing to provide assistance in the contemplated invasion of Italy through his Mafia connections." I should also note, which is a footnote of the paper, that Del Grazio offered to murder the labor leader John L. Lewis, too, because he was conducting supporting strikes and disrupted the war. When assessing the impact of Operation Underworld, historians should be cautious not to limit their focus on Dewey's decision to commute Luciano's sentence. That's a critical issue, but in this multifaceted scheme, it is also important to consider the repercussions of Dewey's action. Since Luciano's real contribution did not become evident until several years after his deportation. In his extensive examination of global drug trafficking, Alfred McCoy observed that World War II gave the Mafia a new lease on life. Although we may never know precisely the nature or extent of Luciano's activities, there is no doubt a relationship developed between the Allied military government, AMGOT, in Sicily and the Mafia. Subsequent to the Allied invasion, the Sicilian Mafia successfully infiltrated AMGOT, not wholly undesirable since the Allies and the Sicilians shared a mutual loathing of communists. It is difficult to know if AMGOT commander Charles Poletti, former lieutenant governor of New York, who Luciano referred to as one of our good friends, was acting in the interest of the Allied occupation when AMGOT appointed mafiosi as town mayors in western Sicily, or if underworld ties he established during his political career influenced his action. The latter does seem possible, since Poletti chose as his interpreter Luciano Lieutenant Vito Genovese, a fugitive from New York. Operation Underworld was indeed a curious relationship between Luciano, the Navy, and FBN agents that had an impact on Governor Dewey's career. Whatever the FBN's role might have been, the Dewey-Luciano episode resonated 20 years later. In personal correspondence to George White in April 1965, Anslinger lamented while preparing a book that, "I told the facts about Dewey and Luciano. My publisher sent it to Dewey, who was a friend of his, and Dewey screamed defamation." Luciano's role in Operation Underworld was an embarrassment for ONI, and this was a past probably better forgotten by the Navy and the FBN. Since naval intelligence officials approached Sox Lanza and ultimately Lucky Luciano, government agencies have collaborated with suspected or known criminals to accomplish foreign policy objectives. In Operation Mongoose, the CIA approached the underworld to assassinate Fidel Castro. General Manuel Noriega, a longtime American ally, worked as an informant for the CIA while accepting bribes from Colombia's Medellin cartel. And the government was complicit with drug traffickers for the release of American hostages in the Iran-Contra affair. The legacy of dangerous liaisons has been enduring, if not improper. During his prosecution of Luciano in 1936, Dewey argued that we have to use the testimony of bad men to convict other bad men. It was difficult to distinguish the lawbreakers from the law enforcers in the name of justice. Perhaps Dewey believed the end justified the means a decade later when Operation Underworld used bad men to prevent other bad men in the interest of national security. Thank you.